on 1116 SEN, Afternoons with Andy Marr.
For robot building supplies, robots got it.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome along to SEN Afternoons. Brett Phillips in for Andy Marr today. Big program between now and 3 o'clock. Terry Wallace to join us right off the top in just a couple of moments. Corey Homicide Williams, always an entertaining half hour with Homicide to talk all things NBL coming up after 1 o'clock. We'll talk a bit of tennis with esteemed tennis reporter Linda Pierce, who is with me at the Davis Cup in Adelaide on the weekend. Plenty to talk about in the world of tennis. Nick Revolt will talk a bit of footy after 2 o'clock. So a fair bit happening in the afternoon slot. First time I've been in the brand new studios of SEN. So this is quite nice, I've got to say. I could get very comfortable here and just spend the entire afternoon. But we are here, of course, for robot building supplies. Robots got it. And Terry Wallace, as I said, off the top is here for McCafe, Melbourne's finest coffee and official coffee of afternoons. Is that right? I haven't seen a McCafe coffee arrive just yet. Player, good to see you.
Yeah, hello, BP. How are you going? And how was your summer of tennis?
It was big, Terry. I think I'm still adjusting to life outside of the bubble of tennis, to be totally honest. And we had 3 days at the Davis Cup in Adelaide, a very different Davis Cup. It certainly isn't the same, and we're not going to play till November now, so I get a feeling there's a fair bit of water to go under the bridge as to whether that format will be better down long term.
Do you think people in general, and if you want to ring us up and have a chat about that, you're more than welcome to, but do you think people in general will accept the new system of how it's working?
Well, I don't think the best players are going to buy into it, and the whole aim of changing it was to get the best players to play, Terry, but I think of 9 of the 12 countries who played in the qualifiers over the weekend, their top-line player didn't play. Mm. And they suddenly think in November, late November, when the season is all done, that Djokovic and Federer and Murray and Co are all going to play, it's not going to happen. It's the worst timing. So the Australian hierarchy last week continued to show their displeasure, led by Leighton Hewitt. So it was different. It was best of three. It was over very, very quickly. Memorial Drive, fantastic, right next to the Adelaide Oval there.
It is brilliant, Memorial Drive.
It's going to have a big redevelopment in the next 12 months, which is outstanding, but it's certainly not the Davis Cup that the drama of it, the best of five, 3 days, pulsating days that we've had in the past. But we'll see how it unfolds. I mean, change happens. We accept that in life and in sport, but whether it's good for a competition that's nearly, 120 years old, we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, we've been a little unlucky as well just with our major events. I was on with KB and Turfy last night. And, we were all talking about the Super Bowl and how, really it was just a bit of a snooze fest. And, I know for those that are really involved in it, the tactical aspect of it, that there was something you could appreciate about the way that Belichick went about the defensive aspects of what he put in place. But for those who just like to enjoy their sport, that didn't really live up to it. And I thought exactly the same with the Australian Open final. We got a matchup that was mouthwatering, but it just didn't quite live up to it. So our big events just haven't quite hit the mark. Certainly the girls' final did. I mean, that was a really good final. But just the last couple of really big events we've had, it sort of just had that little bit of a letdown flavour to it.
No, spot on. Happy for you to weigh in, 1-300-736-736. So the lines are open. I know Plough's got plenty to bring to the table. You mentioned the name Bill Belichick, and I wanted to tap into your coaching mind on that, and then the Steve Larkham situation at the Wallabies as well. But coaches have always fascinated me, Terry. I go all the way back to when I coached junior footy many, many moons ago, and I was always reading books about coaches, and I read all Phil Jackson's books when he was in charge of the Chicago Bulls and then the Lakers, and the value of a coach who gets heavily lauded when things go well, and when things don't go well, they're often the first to exit. I mean, you've lived and breathed that. I'm just, the whole Belichick story fascinates me. I know I listened to Tim this morning just speak glowingly of what he has achieved and his coaching genius, and I don't sit here to profess to really understand the NFL game, and I'd love to understand it more and go there live and actually watch it, but this man clearly has a special touch. But just the value of what a coach can do for a group of players, he needs to have talented players, but obviously some coaches can just do things that others can't to bring the absolute best out of those players.
No doubt that's the case, and I think it was almost the crowning glory for Belichick, because some, I don't think many, but some, sort of said, well, really, it's been off the back of Brady, you know, in Brady's brilliance that Belichick's been able to get the results that he's got. But that wasn't the case yesterday. I mean, this was the case of a well-oiled, well-organized machine getting the job done, not, you know, one superstar sort of just dragging them over the line. So I thought from that point of view, anyone that had any mild little questions, I mean, that went out the door. I've always thought one of the greatest things, and there's so many layers to coaching, and yeah, we're not going to be able to sort of tear it all apart and sort of explain it, but I always think one of the greatest things from a coaching point of view is when the players have comfort that their coach is ahead of the game, you know, that is in front of the game and that they're on the cutting edge of whatever's happening in that industry at that current time. I think that that gives the players great faith. One, I think it gives them more buy-in to what's actually happening around the place. Yep. And I think that that drives you a long, long way to getting the results that you want, because once you've got the focus of a whole group who really do believe in what the word is coming from the senior coach and what you're trying to achieve, once you get that buy-in from a whole group, even reasonably good sides don't necessarily, there's people, you know, in the locker rooms that are questioning why we're doing it this way. You know, I'm not quite sure my role's exactly as it should be. Yeah. I mean, that's happening all the time.
Yeah.
When you get that total buy-in and people are just glued to the fact that their man, their coach, is right at the cutting edge, I think that that's as valuable as anything.
And how noticeable is that? I mean, so if I go back to another era when you played in the successful Hawthorn teams under one of the most revered coaches in Alan Jean, who clearly had an influence on his group. Unless you're on the inner sanctum, and you were, so you can describe it for us. That's the thing that always intrigues me. It makes me want to go inside that inner sanctum and work out what makes that coach so special above that coach. But this was an era that obviously that wasn't necessarily the cutting edge, and from a tactical point of view, and the game was obviously, you know, from the 80s to now has changed dramatically. But can you take us back to that time?
Yeah, look, I think there's about three layers to Alan that I would put up. One was he had a great understanding of people.
Yep.
He used to have this little saying or this little point that he used to put across, and it was about leadership and leadership groups. I mean, we didn't have really leadership groups back in those days, but he sort of said, oh, I don't need to really have a leadership group. He said, all I do is have a barbecue when I first arrive at a place. And he said, what you find at the barbecue is all the like types will go into their own little groups. So, yeah, if it's the punters around the place, they'll all be having a chat about the horse racing or whatever. Yeah. If it's, you know, back in those days, if it was the drinkers, you know, they'd be all over at the bar having a little bit of a chat.
Yep.
The nerds, you know, would all be sort of in a corner. Yeah. And what he sort of said is he just look at the group and he sort of said they didn't have an election, but there was always one person who was the more powerful person within those little pockets of the club. And so he would just observe and find out who was pulling the strings of all those groups, and he'd make sure he got them on side and they would get the rest of their group on side. So that was just a knowledge of people. He still had a real sense of tactic, even though it wasn't a great tactical time. I mean, that was the first time that, you know, the three phases of the game, either we've got the ball, they've got the ball, or the ball's in dispute, and you're needing to play the three phases. I think almost before that it was one phase, just everyone just worried about when you had the footy, and it wasn't much about the other two aspects. So there was still a tactical edge that had us probably running harder, working a bit harder than what a few of the sides were. Obviously a good team. And then he was a powerful, a powerful person, you know, senior sergeant of the police force, booming voice. You know, most of us have heard those speeches over a period of time. So I would have thought those three things: ability to know your people, you know, having a real presence about yourself, but still having a tactical edge. Those three with a pretty fair team structure as well.
Yeah, no, it certainly fascinates me. 1300 736 736. Got a double pass to the six-day cycling event at Melbourne Arena, which will be fantastic. And also a double pass to Melbourne Victory and the Perth Glory. That is Sunday at Amy Park. All thanks to Melbourne Victory, your 2018 A-League champions. Davis Cup, footy coaching. There's a few other topics we'll throw around this hour with Plough. Stuart's been good enough to give us a call in Murrumbina. Stuart, good afternoon.
G'day, Brett. G'day, Terry. I was just interested in your comments on Davis Cup. No offence, but I personally, I didn't sort of know it was actually on. I think the only bit of commentary was the sort of bit of the stoush between the Hewitt and Tommy situation. But I'm not sure, was it actually advertised or what channel was it on? Because I would have liked to have probably tuned into that.
Yeah, it was on Channel 9 right across the weekend. Grothy was there, and Clint Stanaway and Todd Woodbridge and Fitzy, so they did certainly broadcast. I mean, the International Tennis Federation, it comes under their body, so they're responsible for promoting the Davis Cup. There were certainly some articles in the build-up, but I can appreciate that probably after the Australian Open, people might have turned away from tennis thinking that's the end of the summer. But we, of course, go all year round. It's 52 weeks of the year, the tennis season. But I think people would have known about it. I can tell you, in Adelaide, they were genuinely excited. It's the first time Davis Cup had returned there for 15 years.
Reasonable crowds?
Crowds were, I think the capacity of Memorial Drive is about 5,000, so it was pretty close. I mean, the Saturday was hot, so not a great day to sit out in the sun. And I think the real hardcore tennis fans, you know, just certainly appreciate in Australia any time tennis comes to their backyard. So I think TA are doing a good job in that regard. And next summer's going to look different, the ATP Cup, and then trying to get the best players spread all over the state. So wherever you live, you get a taste of the best.
Yeah, which is you'd like to sort of see. The other thing, just the fact that we had so many good, young, talented players perform well at the Australian Open and through that summer of tennis, I think just really lifted, the interest of the tennis fans around it, or the non-tennis, the ones that are not absolutely locked.
Yep.
Yeah, all of a sudden there was something to really get a bit excited about.
Yeah, I think for whatever sport you follow, we love following Australians overseas in particular. Yeah. Even if it's our Australian test team playing a huge Ashes series, that's the ultimate test, not defeating Sri Lanka 2-0 Sri Lanka A in the last couple of weeks. We want to see Australia go on and win an Ashes series. We want to see our Aussie tennis players conquer higher mountains. We want to see our golfers win the big tournaments. Whatever sport it is, I mean, you don't have to be an ardent fan of that sport to really appreciate good sporting performances.
Well, while we're on that, I just thought I'd have a look at what, and I'll be interested in our listeners to see what they sort of think.
Yep.
I put down my best Victorian events. Mm. And it's only my own feel for them.
Yep.
And I've put them in order, top five, where I sort of sit at the moment. So I had number one, and this is me, but I've still got the AFL Grand Final.
Yeah.
I just think the interest in this state around Grand Final Day and how it plays out is still the biggest sporting event in our state.
Hard to disagree with that.
Some might argue the point. I'm an unabashed, and I want to speak about the events of the past week, but I'm an unabashed racing man.
Mm.
So I've still got the Melbourne Cup in second spot. You know, the race that stops the nation, doesn't matter where you are. This year I was up in Yarrawonga. You know, the amount of people putting bets and tickets, you know, people that never bet any other day. It's just a pretty incredible sort of day. So I put that number two. I've got the tennis in at number three.
Yep.
I think clearly internationally, resonates with more people overseas, and certainly being the case. So that's probably the biggest event that we have.
It is.
But I certainly, for homegrown product, I've got the other two just in front of it.
Mm-hmm.
Fourth, I have the Boxing Day Test.
Yep.
Hasn't been a glory of past years, the last couple of years, but certainly it is something that's really still strong on the landscape. And in fifth, I've got the Grand Prix.
Okay.
And I'm not a major car man, so others might have that a little higher, but that's my five.
All right, you put it out there, player. After the break, I want to get your calls. Got a couple of great prizes to give away. Double pass to the six-day cycling event at Melbourne Arena. Got a double pass to Melbourne Victory, Perth Glory. That is Sunday at Amy Park. 1300 736 736. Plenty of topics to weigh into, but Those five, we are blessed. When you just reel off those five, and we think, how blessed are we to live in this magnificent sporting city? SEN Afternoons for Robot Building Supplies. Robots got it. More with Plough on the other side.
Brood,
great to have Robot Building Supplies on board. Brett Phillips in for Andy Murr all the way through to 3 o'clock. Terry Wallace with me for the first hour. We're throwing a couple of different topics around. Davis Cup, your five big events in Victoria. Geez, you could probably add another five in there. We're just absolutely blessed. I'll just quickly run through those five again, Plough. 1-300-736-736 if you want to weigh in as to Plough's order and what you have is your best and favourite sporting events here in Victoria.
So very quickly, the AFL Grand Final. Yep. I just think that captures the imagination of the nation. Melbourne Cup at number two. The tennis, Australian Open at number three. The Boxing Day Test at number four. And the Australian Grand Prix at number five.
Okay. I don't mind that order. I find it hard to probably change any of that order. 1-300-736-736 if you want to weigh in, or 0433-98-1116. We're getting a few coming through on the text with a range of topics that we're throwing out there early. Just the other one on the coaching one that I wanted to tap into is Steve Larkham, who's been effectively given the flick as an assistant to Michael Checker. So
I'm aware of the circumstances.
He'll still stay in the rugby system. But just one on the text here. Larkham and Checker couldn't agree on key attacking philosophy. So Larkham is the one to get the axe. Checker should have been given the boot after our worst test year in 60 years. It's a fascinating situation. You've obviously coached at the highest level, player, where you're working with a group of people as a coaching staff who would, challenge you on things and have different views of what the game looks like and how it should be played. But ultimately, the senior coach has the final say on what that looks like. And then trying to work with your assistants to make all that work so there's a clear message actually going to your players. I wanted to tap into a bit you on that.
So behind the scenes, behind closed doors, so you're talking about match committee meetings, coaching structured meetings, you can argue the point as much as you want and, at times it gets extremely heated, the exchanges are really very, very strong because, they're all strong people, combative types, that have played the game and, have very, very strong opinions of how the game should be played. So you're not always going to agree. There's no problem with that. But once you leave that room, you've got to be seen to be all on the one page. Mm. If there's a breakdown of that, if you're getting, and I don't know the circumstances, with the Larkin situation, but if you're getting mixed messages outside so that the playing group are starting to get messages that the coaching group are not in agreement with, the tactical way that they should be going about it, that's a very dangerous place to be. Now, the senior coach, the administration have one of two things. If they back the senior coach must have the right of way to be able to get things. So, therefore, if there was that, and I'm only surmising here, if there was some mixed messaging coming to the players and a disagreement on tactics and that wasn't staying within the room, they have to get rid of the problem. And so, therefore, if they're supporting the senior coach, that other person has to step aside or be taken out of that position. So I think that that's the right thing to do if that was the circumstances.
Yep.
You can argue the question very much about whether the senior coach should have, in fact, kept his position or not kept his position. But once they backed him in, I think that was the only way that they could go.
So when you're putting a coaching team around you, I mean, is your aim to get people in who are absolutely going to challenge you
absolutely.
And bring a whole heap of different ideas? Is
absolutely.
That the clear number one aim?
Absolutely, 100%. If you've got a coaching group, at a match committee for that matter, that are sitting in there all smoking the peace pipe the same way, I would suggest to you that that's not a great scenario to have. I mean, it may sort of seem like you're all on the same page, but it has to be, a fairly combative situation and really, be challenged about the way that we're doing things. Because it's always the way, when you're losing, you're not necessarily doing everything wrong.
No.
And when you're winning, you're not necessarily doing everything right. So and that's where the challenge comes in either way. I mean, so it really is an important part, but it has to stay in that room.
So were you ever in a situation, player, where it got to the point with one of your fellow coaches that you just couldn't agree on anything?
not on anything, but on a, let's say a certain aspect that, you know, you just got to the stage where you just sort of said, well, we've both got to just calm down, walk away and come back at another time and have another look at it, because we're just not getting anywhere here. And when it starts to get too heated, right, and it becomes a little bit more personal, then you're better off stepping away, come back and do it all over again.
And just, I suppose, with the way sports evolved too, that there's now more coaches who are working with select players in lines in our sport, and then obviously in rugby, in this case, your defensive unit, your attacking unit, who develop a real connection with the actual line coach. How difficult is that sometimes?
And controlling, well, you've got to have trust. I mean, that bottom line is you've got to have trust in the people that you're dealing with, that they're going to be passing on, you know, the messages that they need to get the right results for their unit, but also to get the right results that the senior coach is looking for. And, you know, if that trust is broken down, and to be honest, I think that's why we do see quite so much change. It's freshen it up, you know, with the assistant coaches, but sometimes there'll be a little bit of a breakdown of how the senior coach is working and reacting with a particular assistant coach. So they'll move on them to get somebody else in who they may have a little bit more trust and faith in.
Yeah, I'd love to be a fly on the wall again. I'd love to be a fly on the wall in general, just spend a whole year inside elite sporting teams. We'll take some news headlines in just a moment, but 1-300-736-736 right throughout the hour to weigh into a range of topics that Plough has put on the table. We'll talk about the Darren Weir situation in just a moment. And also the future ahead for the Australian cricket team with a huge Ashes series, a World Cup, of course, to come a little bit later on in the year. But let's jump into the SEN newsroom with the latest news.
Robots got it.
Great to be with you on a Tuesday. Brett Phillips in for Andy. Nice to be here. 1-300-736-736 or on the text 0433981116. Terry Wallace in for the first hour. Plenty on the sporting menu to discuss. One of your passions, Plough, of your many sporting passions, is horse racing. We were just talking about the Melbourne Cup, where you had it ranked among the big Victorian sporting events. The Darren Weir situation, front and centre at the moment.
It's really disappointing for the industry, and it will be interesting to see what impact it has. Look, I get the sense that we've had a lot of things go wrong in the past, and the sport continues to be able to thrive and overcome them. I would have said that I had 8 people on the weekend that come up to me and just in general talking terms and said that they are almost at the stage where they've had enough of horse racing. Now, that won't be the people who love it. I mean, you know, I spent 10 years in the industry. I was with Sky Channel for 10 years. Love the sport. Have been involved in it for a long, long period of time. Will always have a love for the industry, but for those who aren't as locked, will it have an impact on them or won't it? It will be fascinating to sort of watch how that actually plays out. And look, I just think it's, for those that are lovers of the industry, it's just disappointing that we're going through this again.
Yeah, it is. The news, obviously, I know Leo Schlink reporting in the Herald Sun just before we came on air, Darren Weir's expulsion from racing likely to be formalised tomorrow morning, facing a 4-year disqualification. We'll have his charges heard at 8:30 tomorrow morning by the Racing Appeals and Disciplinary Board, Australia's largest trainer, deciding not to contest the serious charges relating to possession of jiggers or electronic apparatus after being told stewards intended to impose the 4-year ban. So there's plenty to play out. I mean, it obviously has shocked a lot of people in the industry, considering his stature and what he's achieved in the game.
Yeah. No, look, I suppose from a point of view of our listeners, that if you want to text in, you can do that or give us a call. But do they believe that 4 years is enough? Or I do. I think that that's about the right amount for what we know. And they've gone on record as saying that if there is any more, the investigation is continuing. Mm. If there is any more, they can go back to the well and reapply extra time if that is the case, if there's anything else found out. But we can only deal with what's on the table at the moment. And I think for what's on the table, I think 4 years is appropriate. There's a couple of other little sidelines to all this that I'm interested in our listeners' opinions on as well. Number one, some of the horses that have gone to other stables now, and now I'm thinking about maybe the distance horses, so Land of Plenty, Extra Brut, they've both gone to the Mar stables. So number one, will they be the same horses? I mean, will, you know, in 12 months' time, because there is some, you know, talk about some of the actions of what was going on there that may have been able to get them to go better than what was expected.
Mm.
Under different trainers, will they be the same horses? My other factor on this is we've got one of those horses being Land of Plenty that's running as a second favourite in the CFO Stakes this weekend. Now, only last Saturday, so last Friday night, that horse was still under the auspice of the weir factors, and so all the training and anything that might or mightn't have been going on there, this horse has been trained for an autumn carnival under weir until last Friday. Are people comfortable with the fact that now that we'll be running, I know it's under a different trainer now, but it's only been under the trainer for a week. Are people comfortable with the fact that that will be running against the other horses, and we don't know? We actually don't know whether it has an advantage or no advantage or a disadvantage for that factor because of the fact that it's had such a turnaround and change of stable.
Yeah.
It'll be fascinating to see how all that plays out with all the weir horses going to other stables and whether people back them with confidence, whether they don't back them, whether they stay away from them, and how they actually perform.
Is there more to this play? I mean, 4 years, so for what he's been accused of, I mean, you think 4 years, it shouldn't be any more than that?
No.
Do you think it should be any less?
No.
Or is there more to play out here?
I think there's more to play out, personally. I can't see the federal police, and I said this last week, I can't see that the federal police are going to raid the premises of Darren Weir looking for a couple of jiggers. I can see the racing... the racing department doing that, but I can't see the federal police going in there in a morning raid only expecting to find that. So I still think that personally, don't know, but personally I just think that there might be more into this investigation.
So as someone that follows horse racing passionately, what about for yourself, the last week?
I'm really disappointed. I'm really shattered because, I mean, here we had a trainer that we all looked upon as a superstar of the industry. You imagine the same thing happening with the late Bart Cummings.
Mm.
Like, how earth-shattering would have that been for those who follow the sport and for how revered Bart was? And I'm not trying to smudge his name at all, but, you know, Darren Weir was getting up to those type of levels, not to Bart's level in Melbourne Cups, but certainly for his dominance of the sport. You know, so to have that come down and to find out that, you know, cheating was going on, and I'm not naive, and I don't think that, you know, many of us are naive to, you know, some of the things that have played out in the industry over a period of time, but it's just when it's your number one person in the sport, gee, it's disappointing.
Well, I mean, whatever comes out of it, I mean, if we go back to cycling at their lowest ebb with Lance Armstrong and then others who followed suit. Now, we could argue, I mean, 10 years down the track, has cycling totally recovered? Or in some people's minds, it's always going to have a stain there and have people suspicious about what is taking place. So it's the long-term ramifications. Even though some of this stuff might have been eradicated and time moves and protocols and procedures get much tighter, there'll always be people who, because of one incident, will view that, gee, that sport to me has got an element to it that I just don't trust.
Oh, well, I would say twofold. It would be really interesting to see how the spring carnival goes because we know that corporate-wise now, corporate bodies are so concerned about their image and what they're portraying. Will it have any impact or effect corporately on what happens come spring carnival? That will be of interest to me to sort of see how that plays out. No, I'm just talking, look, it might only be marginal, but how that actually plays out. I have no doubt, as I said, I spoke to half a dozen, eight people come up to me on the weekend. I have no doubt that those that are not absolutely heavily involved in the industry, it will impact some where they sort of say, not for me. Now, absolutely not for me. I think the industry will get over it, move on, and be able to keep growing, but you'll lose some. I have no doubt you'll lose some.
Yeah. Well, it's going to play out tomorrow, so around about 8:30 we'll find out the fate, but that's the news that obviously has come through in the last hour or so, that his expulsion from racing likely to be formalised tomorrow morning around about 8:30. So we'll have it covered as that news comes to hand on SEN. We might take a break, and we're going to come back, and I want to put AFLX on the table and get your view on the summer of cricket as well. Australia finishing off in style, but where do we really sit now with some big cricket to be played overseas, a World Cup, and then a big Ashes series against the Poms. In saying that, though, what about the West Indies? Finally did something in the world of Test cricket and turned it on.
Good,
although England, don't know where their heads were, because they're not world beaters, the West Indies, but their fast bowling captain, Jason Holder, has said, come with me. If you want to play Test cricket, I want you to be fair income. If you want to play in 2020 leagues around the world, go and do that. So hopefully there's some real guidance, because to me, Test cricket will never be truly strong unless the West Indies get back to
they
being
magnificent,
super
they?
Competitive. We'll take a break, SEN Afternoons, for Robot Building Supplies. Robots got it. Welcome back. Brett Phillips in for Andy Plowers in for this hour, of course, here for Robot Building Supplies. 1300 736 736, the number to call. Love to have a chat to you. 0433 98 1116 on the text. AFLW, AFLX, plenty to talk about for the JLT series, and the season proper will be here before we know it. Plow, you were front and centre. Geelong, North Melbourne. I got back from the Davis Cup. It timed beautifully. Turned on the TV. Great pictures of a packed, I think nearly, what, about 18,500, 19,000,
yeah,
down at Geelong. And I've got to say, in the first 5 minutes of watching that contest, I certainly noticed a change from season two of AFLW. And obviously there's been a lot of things worked on and looked at, and the aesthetics of the game. And it was a great display and some good matches across the weekend.
Yeah, well, very even, very close matches. Apart from the Carlton North Melbourne game, which,
yep,
was a little bit of a blowout, but the others were really even. Look, I enjoyed it. I know it's not for everyone, and that's fine. I've got no problems with that whatsoever. But I thought there was some improvement there. The Saturday games I didn't think was as strong as the Sunday games. You enjoyed the Geelong game. I was down there. I quite enjoyed it.
Mm.
But I thought a couple of the Sunday games even flowed more. And, yeah, the scoring wasn't that high necessarily on the Saturday. But, I thought it went quite well for week one. I thought the big winners for me were Cats, obviously, in their first victory ever.
Yep.
The Bulldogs being able to win over in Adelaide, I thought it was a bit of a throwaway effect from the Crows. They won 11, they kicked, but certainly that was a big win. And Fremantle being able to get over Melbourne, that was their first interstate victory. So I thought they were the big winners. I mean, I know North Melbourne won by the most, and there's a lot's been spoken about them, but I think that they've got bigger challenges ahead of them over the next few weeks, and we might find out a bit more about them on Friday. Big losers to me were the Blues and the Pies. And that Demons loss hurt them sort of at home. They would have expected to win that one. Mm. I like some players, just very quickly.
Yep.
Lawrence Spark, I thought that 11 marks held the Bulldog defence together, and I thought that she was probably the reason why they got over the line. The key forwards for Fremantle, Ebony Antonio, yeah, going from one end of the ground to the other.
Former basketballer, wasn't she?
Yeah, really, really worked well as a forward.
Yep.
Her and Gemma Horton, I thought, did a really good job. I liked Emma King's effort in the ruck, the ex-Magpie. I thought she was a dominant player in that game. Jamie Lambert for the Pies, just her efforts to try to get her side back into the game and over the line. I thought she was super, super tough. And and Madeline Boyd in that game as well, for the key forward for Geelong, thought she did a really good job. And young girl for Melbourne, Eden Zanker.
Okay.
I thought last year she played 3 or 4 games as an 18-year-old, only 19. She's a big, strong girl who you could see the massive improvement that had been made from one season to another. So I think she's going to have a bright future. And I mentioned last night, but I was rapt that the two players of the round that I gave were Nina Morrison and Ashley Riddle, both playing their first game. So Ashley with North I thought when the game was there to be won in the second quarter in particular, she dominated in that particular part of the game, and then it was over after halftime, and Nina Morrison really just dragged the Cats over the line.
She did. I was reading Beck Goddard's column in The Age today, Plough. The skills aren't the issue here. It's the short season. The mental pressures that transfers to desperation around the footy and in front of goal is enormous. Every game is like a final. It was a really interesting article talking about, okay, everyone knows that in the formation of AFLW that the scoring hasn't been huge. Certainly we saw a shift in the more open play and the way the game's been designed in season three. But just on that point of, you know, not really been able to ease into a season. I mean, you've got to hit the ground running. You talk about the impact of, you know, Carlton and Collingwood and
Melbourne yeah,
losing that opening game. And if you're suddenly 0-2 by the end of this weekend,
well, that's why
I think
the biggest game this weekend is the game that I'm actually calling, and that's at Victoria Park, because it's Collingwood versus Melbourne. You think the team that, yes, you were just saying, I think the team that walks off the ground as the loser is in big trouble. And this is where I personally think the Big Bash got it wrong this year. I think it's been too long. And you know, people aren't, I mean, some are, you know, if you're an absolute cricket tragic, you'll be following every single night. I've found myself in and really involved and then sort of losing my way a little bit and then getting drawn back to it for a bit again. So it's been a bit up and down for me. I'm hoping that the women's, and I know that they want it completely different. They want a full season and to be able to play it over a 22-round series like the men. But I love the fact of how it is at the moment that every game counts, and particularly that now we haven't just got a final, we've got a final four.
Yep.
So it'll keep every game more involved for longer into this shorter season.
So I think TV numbers were pretty sound.
Pretty good, yep, pretty good.
The crowd, obviously, at Geelong, about 18,000. The crowds around the other games, it was 5,000 down in Tassie.
Yeah, I think Casey was still pretty good considering how hot it was as well. I mean, I only saw that one on the telly. But, yeah, the numbers there seem quite good considering it was nearly 40 degrees. So, no, I think it was a really good kickstart to it.
I'll suggest you read Beck Goddard's article. The inaugural winning coach at Adelaide in the first season of AFLW. It just gives you a real perspective on what this comp is about and the level of commitment these players are actually putting to it. And it's only going to, for me, as more girls take up junior footy and come through the system and start picking up a ball when they're at that sort of Auskick level, have 10 years of developing their skills going to an AFLW. I mean, this competition you can only see getting better.
Yeah, well, we saw a little bit of that, I thought, on the weekend with some of the younger girls being able to come out of a pack and go either way, where, you know, that wasn't necessarily the case a couple of years ago. And as I said, I mean, my two best players for the round were two first gamers. So it's going to develop.
AFLX, last night I think the rules were sort of put out and how it's all going to look, and I'm a longer form of any game, to be honest, Terry, but I'll take a glancing interest. I think it's been the fact that it's been condensed down to a day, I think is great, and we don't need to take it overly seriously. It's another version of the game which may attract other heads to, you know, take an interest in the sport, but
it's been designed for the kids.
Yep.
And so therefore what does that mean? It's designed for families. Yeah, because if the kid's interested and wants to go along, mum and dad get sort of dragged along as well, and I think that's the right spot for it to sit. I'm not overly convinced by it because it's of its lack of ballistic nature. I just thought it looked like a little bit of a walk in the park last year. I think that this format is a much better way to go about it with, you know, stars from all different clubs. And you know, if I'm a Richmond fan or a Hawthorn fan or a Bulldogs fan, I sit there and go, gee, am I barracking for this side that's got one of my players in, or am I barracking for another side that's got one of my players in? So I think it's really designed for the youngsters to get involved, and I think a one-day aspect is a better way to do it. Will I be falling in love with it? I doubt it.
No. I think most will probably be in that boat. But it's another offering. We've got a couple of minutes. I want to run the cricket past you as well. Look, great we win the last two. So we walk out of a summer with, what, three test wins, three losses. Where do we sit for you in terms of now going to an Ashes series, considering that England certainly aren't a formidable unit?
No,
we know certainly on their deck they're a different team. I think it goes for everyone in cricket now. It seems like you're absolute world beaters at home and little chance when you're away, except in some cases, but maybe South Africa is the one who are just the toughest to beat right now on home soil, but everyone else seems beatable.
Yeah, well, it'll be interesting, won't it? I mean, does Warner and Smith walk back into the side? It's sounding like that will be the case. What sort of form will both of those players be in? I think that that'll have a major bearing on it. I'm unsure. I mean, when we played against what is up there as one of the best nations, if not the best, but certainly one of the best in India, we weren't able to hack it. We weren't able to get the job done, obviously without those other two guys there. When we played inferior, we were able and capable, so that gives you a bit of gives them a bit of confidence. Mm. But I'm very unsure where we sit going into the Ashes.
I'll tell you one thing Sri Lanka need, though. They need Arjuna back, mate. They need Arjuna to come back in and just give them some presence, because they had no presence in this series.
It was about leadership.
It was a real battle.
Arjuna used to just get under the guard.
No, I'm not sure. I'm not sure where we're at, but I'll be watching with interest.
Great stuff. Thank you, Plough.
Thanks, BP.
Nice work, Terry Wallace in for the hour. Homicide's next. He's ready to roll.